And we're live. Welcome back, guys, to another episode of the Solvable Mysteries podcast. My name is Juras. As every week, I am joined by Glenn Hykov, and we're here to discuss a really fascinating true crime case. How are you feeling, man?
Hey, I'm doing okay. I'm pretty interested to talk about this case today because I don't think I'd ever heard of it. And then I went and I was like, wow, there's a lot of... This is like almost a Maura Murray level thing in some parts of the country.
Exactly. I think at least a few of our commenters have suggested this case quite a bit. So I guess it just makes sense because we didn't really have anything pre-planned for 97. So we just decided to do the Brandon Lawson case. It's a very fascinating case. I will say I have heard of it before, but after doing quite the extensive research that I've done over the last few days, I think I'm ready to discuss this case. I found out that it's like a mess. The timeline in this case is a huge mess. Did you run into the same problem where the timeline was like all over the place on your research? Because there's some people like missing out. Like, it seems like some of the official, like not official, but like big time true crime podcasters or like blogs, they talk about the timeline, but it seems like they miss out key details. And it's like, wait, why are we not talking about certain details that could like really give us an insight into what Brandon was feeling that night?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's even complicated more also on top of that by the family and then the sheriff are kind of at odds. And then, you know, at one point, which we'll get into, like his brother was kind of like lying to law enforcement that night because he thought one thing was going on. He didn't realize, you know, that like his brother had actually, you know, Brandon had actually called the police. And then he had, like, the brother has literally gone to jail, gone to prison, and then gotten out of prison since then. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff complicating this, and there's, you know, it's been some good period of time, too, as well. So, you know, you know how it is, how, like, things come to light, and people's stories change, and, yeah, you know, it'll be really interesting to hash this thing out.
Exactly. Well, I think we definitely can do, like, the vanilla, I would say, structure for the podcast. So let's go over the actual events. I guess we have a bunch of questions, at least on my end. I have a bunch of questions that I want to answer. And then let's jump to the theories, and let's try to really find out what happened to this guy. I don't think we will, but I think we could definitely have a very productive conversation here. So in respect to the timeline, I think we should go over it together. I will be stopping at certain points in the timeline just to ask for your opinion. Maybe you have heard some more information in regards to certain timestamps. So let's jump right into it. So it's all happening in 2013. So Brandon Lawson has been missing for multiple years now, and it's all happening on August 8, 2013 in Texas. Brandon Lawson was a 26-year-old man, a father of four, living in San Angelo. He was a oil field worker, and he was returning home from his shift at an oil field. So what I want to add here immediately is that Brandon Lawson had substance abuse problems in respect to meth in particular, and he initially, after returning home, after putting in a very long days of work in the oil field, has an argument with his longtime girlfriend over 10 years. They were together, Ladessa Lofton. So, do you have any information, because I don't, of maybe the day before this happened? Because let's remember, they have a fight in the house because Ladessa Lofton suspects Brandon has been doing meth the day prior, because Brandon had relapsed, I believe, a short while ago, and he was allegedly clean for 6 months. But now Ladessa, his girlfriend, and the mother of his three children, one of them he had with another woman, now suspects he has been taking meth the day prior. They have this incident at the house. They start arguing. This is all I have. Do you have any more, like, information on the initial argument?
Yeah, I mean, I'll basically confirm what you said, that, you know, Ledessa, like, she also confirms that that was probably almost exactly the entire substance of the argument. And in another podcast, his brother also confirms that he had, like you said, just recently relapsed, like within a day or so of this incident. Is it okay if I throw in a kind of a quick couple of disclaimers about the topic? Because I think it might be good to get this out in front. So, you know, like, because we want to give, I guess, I want to kind of give people a balanced view here. So on one hand, like you said, we're going to talk about somebody who, you know, in some ways had a lot of issues with a specific drug, like you said, which is meth. Now, it's worth pointing out that that's also what a lot of people across the world, and especially in America, have substance abuse issues. Now, meth is certainly one of the bad ones, or one of the very addictive and destructive ones. But, you know, so is alcohol, and so is, like, sugar. You know, a lot of people die of diabetes and other health issues from basically too much sugar in their diet, or, you know, alcohol is a whole other thing. But, you know, alcohol is actually one of the more dangerous drugs, interestingly. But for some reason, it's kind of been grandfathered in as, like, a socially acceptable drug, even though it has probably does the most damage just on a, you know, like number of people affected basis across the world. Okay, so that's out there. I guess the other thing is important to say is, you know, we're gonna give a pretty balanced view of this person. From what I've been able to hear, it sounds like he was mostly a good person that just had some problems with the law, almost entirely around drugs, and he was known to be a good person. It's important to point out that, like, if we point out something about this person's behavior that isn't positive, you know, or even just some impressions we have about him, that isn't us saying that the person's a bad person. Certainly, it doesn't at all look like he was a bad person. But, you know, he's a human being. He's got flaws. One of the things that bothered me when I was doing research was that this one particular podcast slash YouTube show, which had great information and actually really great interviews with the family, but I got to tell you, it really bothered me how, like, and I guess they did it because they wanted to kind of ingratiate themselves to the family for participating on their podcast. But it really undermined, I guess, some of my faith in them. And I don't know. I didn't expect them to come in like 60 minutes asking like tough questions or Fox News or something, you know, like grilling the family. But they were kind of sometimes like bending over backwards to spin things too positively. And even the family members were like, no. Like, he was doing bad drugs and it was bad. So, you know, don't sugarcoat this. But anyway, just wanted to get that out because that was something I noticed when I was doing research for this, was that it made them look bad. And like, it was kind of almost like cringing for them when they were doing that. So, you know, we're going to keep it real in this show.
Of course.
Here's the thing. Brandon's an oil worker, which is like a really lucrative, it's good work. It's blue collar work. You know, it's like, you know, boots on the ground kind of work. There's this one picture of him where he's holding a wrench that was like one of the biggest wrenches I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like, the wrench is, did you see that picture? We will show it. Yeah. I mean, it's no joke. Like it's really dangerous and really well paying work, but it's brutally hard work and it's long hours. So, you know, one of the reasons why methamphetamine and amphetamines were created were originally to help. Well, they were made as diet drugs, but they were also made to keep people up for long periods of time. Now, it's a little kind of a dirty secret that for a long time, and even I think still currently, military pilots would actually take amphetamines to stay up, because if you lose your concentration doing these really long, you know, hours and hours and hours long missions, you can die. So, you know, all the Gulf War pilots and stuff like that, a lot of them were on drugs that were like this. So it's something that is prescribed under certain conditions. Especially was in the past. It's also something that's very rife for abuse. And unfortunately, when you're abusing it, it can put you into psychotic states of mind. That's one of the things that happens to people that abuse amphetamines and methamphetamines is that they at some point actually lose their minds as they stay up, you know, days in a row. But you can imagine for someone that does what Brandon does for a living, it's like a performance enhancing drug, right? Just like nicotine. Nicotine is a performance enhancing drug because it helps maintain your concentration. Like I know a lot of people who work in the financial fields or, you know, as accountants or things like that, that they smoke because it really does help your concentration. Same as caffeine. A lot of us drink coffee, right, to kind of have that bolt of energy. It's the same thing, but unfortunately, it's very addictive. So as a result of this, he and his brother Kyle had a whole host of legal issues because of this. And you can imagine Brandon and his wife, they have, you know, first the kid he had from a prior relationship and then their three children. And her words in the interviews were that the fight was exactly about that, that he was kind of saying, well, you know, I'd like just to start using it a little bit again. And, you know, that's kind of the cycle with someone that has an addiction to anything is that they have this kind of draw. They can't handle it. They can't handle it. It's going to turn into a lot of bit. Right.
Yes.
So, and then their life's going to spiral out of control. It's going to be the same problems. And I think that's what she was like, seeing this like chasm opening up in their future again. And what she was especially sensitive about, in her own words, was that she did not want that around their kids.
Yeah.
Because it was one thing when it was just them. She said actually at one point she was also dabbling in it, but she apparently was able to shake the habit. It wasn't that strong a draw for her. But yeah, now that they've got these three young children – well, four young children, I should say. She was really worried about, you know, what it could lead to and how it could affect the family.
Rightfully so. I think you would agree, right? Because I think a lot of other podcasters I've listened to three podcasts in total when I was researching this case, and some of them, like some of the people on those podcasts, they were kind of portraying this narrative that it was surprising to everyone that he was taking meth and was able to do like 60-hour work weeks in the oil fields. But as you've just said, because I didn't realize this before, meth can actually like enhance your performance if you're doing like hard work for like a prolonged period of time. So now it definitely makes sense.
I'll just interject. I mean, one of the biggest, it's not haha funny, but one of the biggest jokes about people on meth and you know, Adderall and things that are like, you know, they're all kind of the same vein, is that you in the opening stages you get a lot done. You'll like clean your whole house.
Whoa.
That's one of the symptoms that somebody is on something like meth or some kind of amphetamine, is that they'll suddenly like get really busy and they'll clean their whole house and they're doing all this stuff. And you're like, why'd you just vacuum the floor four times?
Whoa.
Well, that's
Jeez.
Why. But yeah, for something that maybe isn't that cognitively demanding. So it's super hard work, but you're not, you know, you're not balancing budgets and like doing rocket science when you're working on an oil rig. You have to concentrate for sure. And it might, you know, that might be counterproductive, but yeah, it's just backbreaking, like you said, 60-hour shifts. So
Yeah, man. I think let's jump right into the timeline. So Brandon arrives home, right? They start arguing, and late in the evening on the 8th of August, Brandon calls his father and tells him he is driving to his house. Now, his father, during the call, unsuccessfully tries talking him out of it. Now, a little information. As we can see, Brandon lives in San Angelo, a town in Texas, and his father lives in a town called Crowley, next to Fort Worth. Crowley, I would say. Now, the interesting part here is, and I want to jump to the route, right? So, this is the route that Brandon would have decided to take. We can see on the visuals here, it would have taken him 3 hours and 46 minutes, and it's in total 232 miles. So it's a very long trip for a man who's who, you know, I think the family was kind of suspecting maybe he's on drugs right there. So they were like really trying to talk him out of making this super long drive in the middle of the night. And now I think the concerns were valid because, well, I'll get to what he actually does very shortly. So we can see that. So he calls at 11:30 p.m., so half an hour before midnight. Now, 11:53 p.m., he actually leaves. So 23 minutes after the phone call, he actually leaves San Angelo, and he was heading for his father's home in Crowley. Now, on midnight, Brandon's wife, Ledesa, well, it says wife, I don't know why it says wife, because apparently they weren't married yet. Ledesa, his girlfriend, calls Brandon's cell phone and asks him to return home or go to his brother's house, and then Brandon refuses. So, you know, 7 minutes after Brandon leaves his San Angelo house for his father's home, 7 minutes after that, Ledesa calls him. He's like, I ain't turning back. I'm going there. So Brandon's brother, Kyle, arrives at the Lawson's home at 12:10 a.m. So 10 minutes after that, Kyle Lawson, who will play a big part in this case, arrives at the home to check on Ledesa and the children. Now, this is the first time I want to ask for your input. Who notified Kyle to go to Brandon's and Ledesa's home? I think it was perhaps the mother of Brandon, or was it the father of Brandon? Because I think it's someone from the family who called Kyle and said, go check up on Brandon because he's acting crazy. Or was it Ledesa? Because I have no idea.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know if Ledesa had called the mother, maybe because, you know, they'd had this fight and she was worried. But the mother, Brandon's mother, called Kyle. And apparently Kyle, at that point, lived in the same street as Brandon, or at least one point he did. He lived, I believe, at this point, he lives in the same street as Brandon.
Yeah.
So it would have been really easy for him to, you know what I mean? He would have been the closest person to kind of intervene in this. Yeah. Let's face it, it's a crisis at this point.
Once again, with the location of Kyle's home, I hear two different versions. I will talk about them really shortly. Now, okay, so an interesting part, I think it's a good time for us to talk about this area. Okay, so for everyone watching this on the YouTube channel, you could see the Google Maps right now, the route that, you know, Brandon should have taken to drive to Crowley, to you know, the house where his father is living. Now, as we can see, he was supposed to take, Road 67, as we can see, right? He was supposed to take Road 67. But now, look at what he does. He actually doesn't take, because Road 67 will lead you, you know, after 3 hours, like 4 hours, I would say, to Crowley. He doesn't take that. At this particular intersection, right here, he decides to take Road 277. I mean, 277, yeah. 277 is still a road that you could take to get to Crowley, but it will take you super long. One of the theories was that he had an actual warrant for his arrest and he was trying to avoid cops. But I think I'll want to ask for your input here a little bit. Why do you think Brandon decides at this particular area right here? Why do you think Brandon decides to take 277 as opposed to 67 to go to his father's? Why the hell does he take a route that leads him in the northern direction, not in the same direction where he was supposed to get to?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. I mean, the whole trip itself wasn't rational. I mean, the distance was something like 250 miles, and I had to look in a map to compare it to, you know, like something for me, how long that trip would be. It's really far. That's why one of the reasons why they wanted to discourage him. It didn't, if you're going to go to your father's to go sleep overnight, I mean, I get that they were close, so that was, you know, maybe that would explain it, that apparently they had a really close relationship when he was growing up. But I mean, that's equivalent to me almost driving to like to Monterey, California, which is, you know, we're talking about like a 4-hour drive or something. So already it doesn't make sense, right? So it's like doing something, I don't know, do two irrational acts make a rational act? Well, do they cancel each other out? Two negatives make a positive?
Exactly. Now, the thing is, why I said I was going to return to this point in regards to Kyle's actual location where Kyle was living is because if you could check this area right here, it's presumed that Kyle still was not at this particular point in time before 12:10 a.m. And that's exactly the point in time when his wife called him and told him, yo, go to Kyle's house, don't go to your father's house, that's crazy, go to Kyle's house, go to your brother's house that's like, that's living nearby. By the way, my apologies if I sound off a little bit. I literally had like the Pfizer shot like yesterday, so I might be a little bit off. Like it's, I feel a little bit off, but like I'm really trying to keep it rolling here. So basically, as I was saying,
you're not gonna like swoon and pass out over there or anything, right?
No. I promise, I'm good, man. So basically, some people state that Kyle actually lives somewhere where you would have to take 277 to get to his house. So it's really unclear whether Kyle was living down the street, because I've heard podcasters say Kyle was literally down the street, but then I've heard other people and other sources stating that the reason why Brandon decided to take 277 is because he wanted to go to Kyle's house. So it doesn't make any sense. I have no idea where Kyle lives. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just, like I said, I mean, I'll say later whether or not I think Kyle is 100% telling the truth all the time. But in the interview I listened to, I believe, if I'm not misstating, that he said that was why, that he, at that point, he was living on the same street. And that was why, you know, it made sense for the mother to call him to go intervene. Like, you know, like I said, sometimes facts get kind of reshuffled over time, but that was the way he explained it in one particular interview, though I will admit he was a little hard to understand sometimes.
I will say, now that I'm looking at the map once again, on the Google Earth, I just realized, and I think it's important to add this little fact, is that it's not actually the longer route that he took to Crowley isn't all that longer, actually. It's only like 15 minutes longer, apparently. Like, it would take you 3 hours and 45 minutes to go to Crowley on the correct route, 3 hours and 45 minutes. And the one that he took would take him 3 hours and 53 minutes. So it's literally only like 8 minutes longer. So I guess it's not super crazy why he did that. But now let's jump back really quickly to the timeline again, because I want to go over the phone calls that Ledessa Lofton missed from Brandon. So actually, Brandon at 12:34 a.m. and 12:36 a.m. called Ledessa 2 times. Ledessa's phone was charging in her truck, so she couldn't hear them. I think it's pretty rational to charge your truck, to charge your phone in your truck. But I will say, some people found it very mysterious why she did that, why she left it there, because wouldn't she be expecting phone calls? I mean, your, you know, boyfriend of many years and the father of your children has now left, most likely on drugs in the middle of the night, and you just leave your phone like that charging? Wouldn't you want it close to yourself? I mean, I could see it both ways, but don't you find it, yeah.
Does your phone even charge in your car when was the truck on? I don't know. That's the part that doesn't make sense to me at all. I mean, maybe some trucks are like that where the accessory works, but then you're charging your phone off of your battery, which makes your truck battery weaker. I don't know. To me, like, I don't believe that my charger draws power from those accessories. You know, someone will write in the comments whether I'm right or not, but I don't believe that my accessories work, my auxiliary. Yeah, so that's
same here.
It's already pretty weird.
I think it's like up to the truck, right? Whatever. Let's move in to what happens next, because you know, 2 minutes. Okay, so Brandon calls Ledessa on 12:34 a.m. and then 12:36 a.m. and then on 12:38 a.m. he calls his brother Kyle and tells him he ran out of gas. Brandon tells his brother that he's being chased by Mexicans from the neighborhood, and apparently Ledessa ordered those Mexicans to chase him out of town. His brother, Kyle, asks Brandon if he's hallucinating because of drugs. Brandon insists he's not hallucinating, and then a call kind of ends right there. Then later on they will have another call. I will go into that, but and I think there were two calls made in short period of times, and then like Kyle apparently was going to the gas station to fill up a gas tank for Brandon, but only then realized that he doesn't have the money to pay for the gas, so he then tried calling Brandon again and asking him if he had money, so he would go to him, get the money, then go back to the gas station, fill up the gas tank, then go back to Brandon. Like, this is what I'm talking about. This is why it's like all over the place. I think we should only stick to like the very important timestamps. So dude, anything you want to add on the 12:38 a.m. call where Brandon says to Kyle, "I'm stuck, I'm out of gas"?
Oh, well, I'll just real quick reference the Mexicans thing. So this is like the infamous Mexicans quote. Both Kyle and his, you know, let's just call her his wife or his common-law wife, because, you know, if you have three kids with somebody and you live all that time, I mean, I don't think they're really a girlfriend anymore. In some places, they're basically your wife.
Yeah.
Both of them said that, quote unquote, he didn't know any Mexicans, which I don't understand how you live in Texas and don't know any Mexicans. But I mean, I don't, maybe their neighborhood is,
yeah,
whatever it is, their social circles. Maybe I don't know how it is where they live. But yeah, anyways, whatever reason, there wouldn't have been, I guess, any groups of people that he associated with that fit that description. And she said that he used to hallucinate and say crazy stuff like that all the time when he was, maybe this is one of the main sticking points with, you know, that sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, the other thing I just couldn't help but note is, I mean, gas, how do you not have enough money to put gas in a gas can?
That's
what, like $10 worth of gas at the most? I mean, how much could it be?
It
seemed really strange to me. Like, wow, either he's super impoverished, which then I really feel bad for him, or I don't know, or there's like a low trust level for his brother. I don't know. It seemed pretty odd.
Yeah. I mean, that's, yeah, the gas money, I was like, oh, come on, man. You don't have the gas money on you right now? Because, well, I don't really know.
I mean, what's your time worth? They're like, I'm going to pick you up, and then we're going to drive back to the gas station, and then, you know what I mean? Like at the end of the day, like, I mean, I guess if you're impoverished and you have more time than money, maybe that makes sense, but otherwise it doesn't make sense to me at all.
Well, he had enough money to fill in his own car with gas.
Yeah.
So it's like,
so what's what the hell's going on?
Yeah. Anyways, this is the location. Now I have two locations, because I found on findbrandonlawson.com, I believe the website is called, they have it as this location where the Ford F-150, the truck that Brandon was driving, was stranded. Some people say it's this place. found it more people saying it's this place, so let's go with this place. You know what I mean? It's once again with this case, there's so much like inconsistencies online, it's like crazy. Let's go. So this is apparently the area where Brandon Lawson is now being stuck, and he calls his brother. So let's just keep looking at, because apparently somewhere in here in the thick bushes, right? Well, the car initially was stranded in a manner where the back end of the truck was actually sticking out on the road, and that's one of the reasons why police officers will respond to this truck pretty soon. Now, I will say, on this Google Earth, we can see cars on either side, which is pretty crazy. I mean, I know it's the middle of the day when the Google Earth car passed, but still, I was kind of expecting there to be literally no one here, but like, we see three cars, so it's maybe not as desolate as I have thought initially. Okay, so what happens after the 12:38 a.m. call where Brandon calls Kyle to inform that he ran out of gas? Basically, Kyle then calls LaDessa and tells her that her husband, pretty much Brandon, ran out of gas. I don't know what they do next. There's like a whole thing where like he goes and picks up like a gas can from LaDessa, then like he finds out that he doesn't have the money to pay for the gas. Like, a whole situation goes down there. Let's not focus on it because it's just gonna make it a lot harder for the audience to understand what's happening. But 8 minutes after that, LaDessa misses a third call from Brandon. So I want to stop here and ask you, why do you think Brandon was so adamant on calling LaDessa three times? Now, we know why LaDessa is missing these phone calls, because you know, she was charging her phone in her vehicle. But then again, she doesn't miss the phone call from Kyle, she only misses the phone calls from Brandon. Now, I'm not saying that LaDessa put up a hit on Brandon with the Mexicans. I find that line of thinking kind of hard to believe, but I will say I found that particular point interesting, but we will not figure this out. I want to ask you a question. Why do you think Brandon is trying to call LaDessa three times at this point? It's because it seems like he tried to call her the most. So they just had this big fight. Why is he calling her?
Yeah, I think that's why, though. I mean, I think that's exactly why, because it's this big marital fight, and you know, either you're trying to make up or you're trying to get another word in, like, oh, I just thought of more stuff that makes me mad, let me go, like, you know, tell you, well, you know, you should let me do this because I let you, you know, blah blah blah. That's what I think. That's why he keeps trying to call. The other thing I was going to say is, if this was happening now, what's crazy is I've noticed this, you know, because there's so many scam calls going on now. That wasn't happening back then, but now it isn't unusual that I'll miss, like, the phone company is actually filtering calls sometimes, it seems like, from me to other people and vice versa. So, like, I'll get the crap call I don't care about, but then when my wife calls, like, we've noticed this, but that wasn't happening in 2013. So that's just worth noting in case anyone's listening and they're like, oh, that happens to me too. Because it does a lot these days with all the phone problems and the scam calls. But yeah, back then that wasn't really a thing yet. Right. One of the things, so just to be clear, the part where place where the truck was found, is it the crossing right over there by the Colorado River?
No. It's close, but it's not. It's not like, I know that we're immediately trying to find out if he drowned in the Colorado River, but it was
Okay, the only reason why I say that is in one of the phone calls that was referenced, there's a noise. I think it might be later on in the 911 call, but his brother says, oh yeah, I know that sound, one of the sounds he said was actually from the bridge from when cars cross over it.
Because we can measure that actually. Let me just quickly measure it. So because this is the bridge, I definitely know what kind of bridge you're referring to. His car The bridge is 1.1 miles in the northern direction from his car, like this bridge, you know what I mean? Like, this is the bridge. The bridge is 1 mile away. So he could have definitely walked there eventually, you know what I mean? But, like, his car wasn't really found right next to the bridge, if that makes sense.
For some reason, on the screen I'm seeing, I'm only seeing the big... Maybe I'm not seeing exactly what you're seeing on your screen.
Oh.
Yeah.
I think I'll try to fix it soon.
Okay. Yeah, no worries. Okay, so yeah, so anyways, that was the only thing, because even without just the whole river theory, it was interesting because there's a lot of, as we got into it, there's a lot of, like, interpretation, I guess, of noises as it gets more
exactly.
mysterious.
And that's...
But there's like the zoo of phone calls, you know what I mean? Like, they needed their own phone operator or something from all the phone calls back and forth.
Right, dude. And this is exactly a good point to talk about the phone calls, because literally 2 minutes after, you know, Ledesa misses the third call from Brandon, Brandon actually decides to call the 911. And yeah, I have a whole thing prepared here to analyze the 911 call a little bit here. So the first thing I want to do, I want to play the 911 call a couple of times for everyone to try to realize what, you know, Brandon was actually saying. And then after we play the 911 calls, I'll talk about the points where people actually hear another person saying, "Protect yourself," and then gunshots in the 911 call. So let's listen in.
9, 2, 13, 0, 50, and 38 seconds. 911 emergency.
Yes, I'm in the middle of the field. The state, we're just pushing guys over. Right here going towards Javelin on both sides. My truck ran out of gas. There's one car here. I got chased to the woods. Please hurry.
Okay, now run that by me.
We're not talking to him. I actually ran into him.
Ah, you ran into him. Okay.
Got the first guy.
Do you need an ambulance?
No, I need the cops.
Okay. Is anybody hurt? Hello? Hello? Hello?
Okay, one more time. Let's listen to the call one last time, and then I will talk about the areas where apparently we can hear someone saying "protect yourself" and then gunshots. Try to find out where those points are throughout this phone call.
2013, 0, 50, and 38 seconds. 911 emergency.
Yes, I'm in the middle of the field. It's like we're just pushing guys over. Right here going towards Javelin on both sides. My truck ran out of gas. There's one car here. I got chased to the woods. Please hurry.
Okay, now run that by me.
We're not talking to him. I actually ran into him.
Ah, you ran into him. Okay.
Got the first guy.
Do you need an ambulance?
No, I need the cops.
Okay. Is anybody hurt? Hello? Hello?
Right. Okay, so let's dissect what he was saying. So now I want to play it again, but I will pause at certain points, and I will try to say what he actually was saying during those times. So let's listen to the beginning of the 911 call. So
9, 2, 0, 50, and 38 seconds.
Right, so this is the where, like, this automated woman's voice is being heard. I think this is literally just like what you would hear, like, when you call, you know, on the reception, something like that. Let's listen in how Brandon starts the conversation.
911 emergency.
Yes, I'm in the middle of the field. It's like we're just pushing guys over.
Okay, so what he said right there is, yes, I'm in the middle of a field, and we don't really know what he says next, but it's quite likely that he said, if they could just bring some guys over. Then he says,
right here going towards Javelin on both sides. My truck ran out of gas. There's one car here. I got to take it to the woods.
What he says here is, right here, going towards Abilene. Abilene is this city right here. So he says he's going to Abilene. He either says on both sides or on Bronte sides. Bronte side, because some people believe he says on Bronte side, like this little town. So I'm quite inclined to think he said Bronte side, because it doesn't make any sense to say on both sides. What the hell would that even mean? Then he says, my truck ran out of gas. There's one car here and guys chasing me into the woods. Now, I don't really hear guys chasing me into the woods. And then he says, please hurry. I think we can still hear him say, please hurry.
Please hurry.
Right, so this is how he said. Let's listen back a little bit to that last part for one more time.
To the woods side. Right here going towards Javelin on both sides. My truck ran out of gas. There's one car here. I got to take it to the woods.
Yeah, I definitely don't hear him saying guys are chasing me into the woods. I hear the word woods, but I don't hear him saying guys chasing me into the woods. Then let's continue on with the 911 call.
Please hurry.
Okay, now run that by me.
One more. I'm talking to him. Hi, so you ran into him.
Okay, so what he says here is pretty interesting. So let me just find. Basically, he says, the lady says, okay, now run that by me one more. She was gonna say one more time, but Brandon talks over her and he apparently says, I tried talking to M. I totally ran into M. Like he ran into some people. Let's listen back to that part one more time.
Now run that by me.
I ran into him.
I don't even hear the word M. I hear like Joe. I ran into Joe, like something about Joe. Like I have no idea. But now this is the point of interest. Let's listen in what happens next.
You ran into him. Okay.
This right here. This is where we can hear someone saying "protect yourself," allegedly. So let's listen back to this point in time right after the 911 dispatcher woman stops talking. You can hear something that like kind of is similar to someone saying protect yourself. So let's listen in.
You ran into him. Okay.
Right there. One more time. Protect yourself. Something like that. You can't hear yourself, but like you could make out the word protect. So I don't know what to make of that. And then lastly, to finish off the 911 call, apparently you can hear gunshots here. So let's listen in what you can hear now.
Got the first guy.
Do you need an ambulance?
Yeah. No, I need the cops.
Okay. Is anybody hurt? Hello? Hello? Hello?
So yeah, so I'm done analyzing the 911 call. You could then hear him saying, no, I need the cops, when the woman asks if he needs the ambulance. He says he doesn't need the ambulance. He says he needs the cops. And then apparently you can hear three noises that are like either it's gunshots, either it's him stumbling a little bit in somewhere on the ground, or it's cars passing through the bridge. So dude, your take on the 911 call?
The protect yourself thing always seems so weird to me, because I'm like, well, who says that? I mean, like, who's he dueling, like, you know, on guard or something? I mean, I don't know that one person would say to another one, protect yourself. It just sounds like a weird duelist thing or something. Now, I could hear him, especially what he says to Kyle on the phone in another conversation where he's like, where's your pride, man, or something like that, about when there's this. When you get into it, sorry, I'm getting a little out of order, but yeah, I mean, he's the only one I could imagine in this whole situation, given what we're going to run into, saying it. It doesn't make sense to me, though. It's like,
okay.
Otherwise, I can't hear someone saying it to him.
Yeah. So very important. So let's bring back to the super confusing timeline. I will try to make it less confusing. This phone call to 911 happens on 12:50 a.m. 7 minutes later, Brandon calls his neighbor. The neighbor doesn't pick up the phone initially, but then tries recalling Brandon 3 times unsuccessfully. So why this is important? If we believe that Brandon is getting shot and potentially killed on the 911 call, that can't be the case, because he's still trying to make a phone call 7 minutes later. So whatever we can hear, the gunshots or whatever, 7 minutes after those gunshots, Brandon still is using the phone, and he will be using the phone for the next half an hour or so, calling other people on multiple times. So after this 911 call was made, he was still making calls. So we don't know what's happening. Maybe he's like getting chased by Mexicans, or like he saw police enforcement doing something illegal, and now police is trying to hunt him down and kill him. We don't know. But what we do know is that he will be calling multiple people after this. So it's not like this is where it ended for him. He's still alive. He's still alive for at least an hour, I believe. Okay, so let's see what happened next. 1 minute later, the neighbor tries to call him 3 times, is not successful. Now, on the same, like literally 1 minute after the phone call to the neighbor from Brandon, a truck driver passes the Ford F-150 and he calls the police, telling the police there's a truck parked dangerously on the side of the road. So this is why the police responds to this truck. Remember the 911 call that we just listened to for like a couple of minutes? That call doesn't go anywhere. In fact, the family realized about that call only 3 days later, when Ladessa Lofton was going through the phone records and found a 911 call. That's when she asked the police to, like, yo, can we listen back to that? Because for 3 days after he went missing, no one even knew about this 911 call. The only reason why police responded to the scene was because a truck driver called them and told, yo, there's a truck parked around this area, and it's parked in a dangerous manner. Now, what happened next is actually Kyle, Brandon's brother, and the police officers, they arrive at the scene almost at the same time. Once again, some sources state that the police officer was already at the scene when Kyle arrived, and some say that Kyle arrived and then the police officer arrived. Now, I'm more inclined to think that Kyle arrived first to the scene, because as he was driving to the scene, right, and this is at 1:10 a.m., so 12 minutes after the truck driver passes Brandon's car and calls the police, 12 minutes after that, Kyle arrives to the truck with the gas or without the gas. Who knows about the gas situation? I don't even want to talk about the gas situation, because it's like retarded, honestly. But like, he arrives to this car, right? And he's on the phone with Brandon, and Brandon tells Kyle, I can see you. You're right there. I can see you. Kyle gets out of his car. By the way, he's driving here in the middle of the night with his own girlfriend and their child. For some reason, I don't know why that was happening or whatever, but like, he gets out of the car and he says, I can't see, like, where are you, Brandon? And Brandon says, like, I'm right here, I can't see you. But no one can see him. And now the crazy part is that the police officer literally arrives at the same time to approximately this location, and then Brandon on the phone says to Kyle, one time, hurry. One time is like a slang word for police or for cops. So he says, one time, hurry. Then Kyle tells to Brandon, I'm not gonna run, I didn't do anything illegal. And then Brandon says, where's your pride, MF-er? Like, there, it's a swear word. We don't want to use it for SEO, but like, where's your pride, MF-er? You know what I mean? So it's like, what do you make of that?
It really, to me, makes me think that he's really high right now, and he's just ranting and hallucinating.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of expecting a longer explanation, but yeah, you kind of went over it really quickly. Okay, so to finish off the crazy timeline here, Audrey, girlfriend of Kyle's, texts Brandon to tell him the police are still on his truck, because let's remember, as you've entailed in the beginning of this podcast, Brandon had like a warrant for his arrest. And so initially Kyle, when he met the police officer near the truck, he didn't tell the police officer that Brandon told him that he could see them. So because Kyle didn't want Brandon to get caught for the search, like for the warrant for his arrest. So actually what they do, they drive a little bit away from the police officer, I believe in the northern direction, and they wait around for him for 30 minutes because they expect Brandon to like come out of the bushes somewhere, because, you know, they all think that maybe Brandon doesn't want to run into police right now. And he never does. Then apparently like some weird situations go down where like Brandon goes back home, Kyle goes back home, puts his daughter to bed, I believe, puts his wife to bed also, then returns here with a friend like at 7 a.m., leaves a gas, a compartment filled with gas in the back of the truck. But Brandon doesn't show up, and then 8:30 a.m. in the morning, his truck is towed, and then shortly after that, a missing person report is filed. No one's seen him ever since. It's been, what, like 8 years almost. So yeah, your take.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my first impression is, depending on what you think happened that night, you kind of get a sense for why. What's her name? Ledressa? Is her name? I just get her.
Ledessa? Yeah.
I just get her name messed up. Yeah, you can see why maybe she was concerned, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if this was all a result of somebody not being able to handle themselves when they're on drugs, I mean, look at all this drama. This guy's like driving all over the place. He's calling. I mean, you could say, oh, it's a chicken and egg thing, because what if they hadn't had to fight? Maybe he would have been, but he would have been home high around the kids, right? And who knows, maybe this is what he does when he gets high like this, is he goes on these like adventures, and you don't really want to be around somebody hallucinating, right? And weird and ranting. But yeah, look at this. So because of, I would say, the drugs, like he's off on this crazy adventure, calling people, even calling 911 on himself basically at some point, and he's got a warrant. And then his brother, who, you know, there's not a ton of detail on this, but also has his own legal situations, gets like enmeshed in this drama, and now he's got to take time out of his day. And yeah, and then at one point he's basically lying to the police, right? So there's a whole other set of things that are going on. Yeah, I mean, it's, I guess it's part of the tragedy of substance abuse. And this isn't like to wag my finger at him and, oh, you know, like this is all his fault. But, you know, it's a complicated issue. But yeah, I guess this is one of the reasons why, you know, there are laws about drugs. When people say, well, we shouldn't have laws about drugs, well, because people like this that can't handle themselves on it. You know what I mean? I mean, I would, you know, sometimes I say some anti-alcohol things on the show, and I don't want people to think like I'm Mr. Anti-Alcohol, but I've had enough problems with people, not in my family, but people in situations being like really stupid when they're drunk and being violent and being problematic. Not me. You know, you get some beers in me, you could get me like blind drunk and you'd never have a problem with me. But I've seen enough people, both personally and just on, you know, like videos and things like that, where it's like, damn, dude, just like enough people have problems that they can't handle themselves on it. that, like, it's a major disruption to society in the case in point. So now you've got this guy who's disappeared, and we're going to go into some theories later on about that. But, you know, whatever happened, you've got four kids now that don't have a dad.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
And this is, you got a lot of, in theory, a lot of unhappy family members. So.
Perfect. Yeah, exactly. Your point. I think this is a good time for us to go through the questions. First of all, I just want to say, I'm so glad I'm done with the timeline. It was such a hassle, to be honest. Now, we could definitely go to the questions. So I see you have your own questions. I have my questions as well. I think we should keep it quite brief. So I don't know, dude, you wanna, let's, I see an interesting question you have posted in the shared file, and it's basically asking whether or not he had some connections with drug dealers or like organized crime. To answer that, I think he probably did, because he had like a previous conviction of possession and of like illegal substances and the intent to deliver, that would mean drug deal. So I would like, he has to get the drugs from someone, you know what I mean? He's not making them himself, so I think he did, right?
Yeah, it was a weird charge, and I'll be fair here and say that some states, especially in the states in that part of the country, have some very strict drug laws. So sometimes when you have what everybody else in the rest of the world would be a relatively small amount of a substance, they'll throw the book at you and say, "Oh, you were trafficking. You know, you had, you know, it used to be no joke in Nevada, 10-20 years ago, any amount of like marijuana was a felony, which is crazy." But you know what I mean? So I don't really know. But yeah, as I understand it, when I saw that charge of, like you said, that then like the intent to distribute or whatever it was, or to deliver, whatever that exact term was, it was like, that sounds like you might know some people that you know are in the drug business. And then like you said, who's he buying his meth from, right?
Exactly. He's
buying from somebody.
Exactly. The next question you have here is that, basically, would he even be able to financially or emotionally just bail on his family? So I think personally I got the sense that he wouldn't. I mean, I didn't find any indications that he would want to leave his family to start a new life, because there's a whole theory that he ran away from this life because he was potentially going to do up to 20 years in jail for the crimes that he has committed in the past, even though it's highly unlikely that he would have gotten that. It's more likely maybe a handful of years or maybe extended probation. So other than that, I don't really see him wanting to leave his family. I mean, I didn't know him personally, but I didn't find any information. Have you?
No, I mean, everything's been the opposite. Everything has been what a very social person he was. I had this in the notes, but I came upon this thought when I looked at someone like him and the way he was described. You know, like we've covered people who have basically pulled something like this, right, where they've kind of erased their previous life and, you know, walked off into the wilderness and formed a whole new life. And they've all been very cold, psychopathic, unfriendly people. You know what I mean? That other people complained about. Well, he wasn't. Like, he wasn't. So far, I haven't heard anything bad about him other than, you know, the substance abuse issues and the legal scrapes. You know, no one said, like, oh, he was a bully or he was a psychopath or he was mean. Like, everything, it's been the opposite. Like, he's been very social, eager to please, making friends. And I feel like someone like that, like, their money, like, his money, you know what I mean? If, like, the thing that he values is those social relationships. Look at that. He was having a problem and he called the whole world.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like I was dying and I called nobody. So, I mean, you know what I mean? Before, like when I felt bad. So it's just interesting to see. I could not imagine, you know, we'll talk about the theories at the end of the show, but I can't imagine a scenario where he willingly turned his back on his family, his kids, his, you know, his father, his brother, and just walked off and like, oh, I'm going to, you know, rather than face face what like realistically would have been probably a couple years in jail and with good behavior gotten out and maybe even had a better life after that, you know, given some of the programs in prison and things like that to straighten him out.
Exactly. The other question you have there is there anything suspicious about how law enforcement treated the incident that night or afterwards? So for me, I had like an interesting point is that basically the police station or like the police force in Coke County, because it's called Coke County, like legit Coke County, it's pretty much six people. So covering up police corruption is easier because there's only six people involved. Then another interesting point is, I believe to this day, we still don't know who the 911 reception woman was. Apparently she worked for an old care home for old people because the area is so small, there's no need to keep a designated 911 receptionist. So actually, it's just some people who are working at the care home. They were putting in double shifts as 911 reception callers, receivers of calls. So the fact that we don't know who that woman is to this day is quite interesting. And the fact that the police chief of Coke County said explicitly, he said, "We have no leads, nothing, nothing." He said nothing two times in his official statement, which is kind of unusual. Usually they don't really disclose how much information they have. But now police is saying, "Nope, nothing to see here, guys," almost like that. So other than that, I mean, it's kind of weird, these things, in my opinion, but, you know.
Well, now that you say that, it makes more sense, because, like, so this little random trivia about law enforcement, at least in the United States, big open kind of rural areas like that tend to be covered by a sheriff's department, while a city, like a suburban or urban area, is more likely to have like an actual police force. And like you said, the difference is just the amount of space to cover, and they're often understaffed. That is interesting that they were basically forwarding the 911 calls to the people that were staffing. I wonder if they get paid for that. Like, that's, yeah, you're making like double duty in your job. It's not such a bad gig, right? Yeah, I mean, so one of the weird thing was, I hope I'm quoting this right, one of the social media posts some years later was sort of something, it was from a local paper, but the local paper, the lady that runs the local paper is like married to the sheriff, or at least it was at the time. So she had this post that was very, very biased towards, you know, in favor of the sheriff's department's stance on things. And it sounds like there's some degree of acrimony. There was also the one weirdness was, well, his brother Kyle was saying that when he went to go look for him, the sheriff's deputy he ran into says, "Oh, well, I just came from that direction, so you don't need to look that direction." You know what I mean? When he was looking for him after, you know, one of those phone, you know, when he was looking for him, but also covering up for him.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you know, don't look that way. The sheriff, basically they met on the road, and he's like, "Well, you know, he's not behind me, so he must have been where you came from, if he's anywhere." It was, I don't know, there's some, it's like a very non-specific kind of, I don't know if you'd call it an accusation, but there's some bad blood where the family feels like maybe the sheriff was quick to wash their hands of the case and didn't do like a really good job searching. Apparently at one point they had even thought about doing like an aerial search, or they did like hire some kind of plane shortly thereafter to do an aerial survey, because you know, this is kind of grim, but especially in that part of the U.S. if something dies out there, and kind of it's desert, right? It's basically desert. You know, buzzards and stuff start coming to eat whatever's there. So, you know, that's one of the surefire ways to see if something died somewhere is to fly over it. If you see where there's a bunch of birds in the middle of the desert, well, what are they doing there, right? They're eating something.
Yeah, so, that's a good point. That's a good point. Another question you have is, looking at the area, is there anywhere he could be stuck or otherwise indisposed that he wouldn't be found by birds, animals, or people? The river, could it move a body quickly away from the area and have it be lodged in the rocks underneath? So I think we've covered about like the area, but like the river, I think it's a good time for us to focus just a few moments on the river. The river is quite shallow. I found it pretty hard to believe that he wouldn't be spotted in this river. Your thoughts, man?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, so what time of year was this again? I'm sorry, August. What was the August? Oh, yeah, I mean, it kind of depends on the year too. This, it says the Colorado River. I'm not sure if that's the Colorado River, like the same one that runs, you know, down literally from through the Grand Canyon and down the state line of Arizona and California. And it could be like this is like later on, but I don't know. I mean, it's not a stream, you know what I mean? And we that other case we covered, the controversial one from Netflix, that was like a stream.
Alonzo Brooks.
Yeah, Lorenzo, that was even like less water than this, yet his body, depending on what you believe.
That's a good point.
Had been moved around. So that's, I mean, this is it's funny because this is always my go-to theory, whether it's like Brian Schaefer or, you know, we've had a couple of other cases like this where I always look to see is there a body of water. Like if this has happened in the middle of like just a spotless desert, with not a drop of water or body of water nearby, I'd be more hard pressed to explain what happened. And there are cases like that where even those people have been miles from where people thought they were. But in this case, I'm like, well, what could happen? Like what could move a body in a way that you wouldn't find it by searching the brush or, you know, the animals? But I don't think it's a perfect explanation. It's just the only thing that I can think of that even slightly makes sense.
Right. A few other questions you have is, was Kyle evasive or deceptive during the interview? I would assume you're talking about the interview he did with Crawl Space Podcast. He kept saying to be honest, and I have heard this is usually a warning sign the person is lying or tends to lie in general. It's supposed to be all subconscious. Dude, you want to articulate on that whole interview? Did you find Kyle, his brother, potentially not telling the full truth? Because I'm not going to lie, I didn't really listen to that interview, so I can't really speculate here.
Yeah, it was, I mean, I'm glad he gave the interview, and it was a very informative. I mean, he's the younger brother. Kyle's the younger brother, and Brandon is really, he said, is his role model. I had to giggle a little bit because, you know, he taught me how to fight and play baseball, and I was like, oh, fight was like first on the list, so that's interesting. But you know, I guess that's growing up with a brother probably fighting a lot around the house. But yeah, it was an interesting interview. Just like I said, his brother is not perfect, but I have heard, and I can probably note times in my life where I've observed this, that when someone is constantly saying, well, honestly, or to be honest, that's supposed to be, supposedly, if we go into like Dr. Grande mode, and maybe he would dispute it, it's supposed to be a tell, like a subconscious tell that you're not, either you're not telling the truth, or you, like you shouldn't have to preface that, you know, honestly, or to be honest. That's like one of those things that people do when they're lying, where they try extra hard to make you think they're not lying.
Okay.
It makes sense. No, yeah. Let me just before I finish it, let me say this is the part of the U.S. where you really don't want to call somebody a liar, if they're not. It's a place where there's a lot of, like, you know, it's a pretty serious accusation. I'm not saying he's a liar. I'm saying that somebody that listens the way he was talking and him saying that could come up with that observation or that question. And he started to get a little dodgy towards the second half of the conversation, where I don't know if I was a police detective who, you know, was super cynical, I might not take him as seriously.
Right. Okay, so I think that pretty much covers the questions you have outlined. I'm kind of apologizing for everyone here as well for seeming that I'm rushing through this stuff. It's because, like, we have a lot of stuff here. So before we jump to the theories, I just want to quickly jump through my questions. And mine are, like, more simplistic. It's like yes or no type of answer. So I think we could go through mine really quickly. My first question I had is, did Ledessa Lofton have arranged for Mexicans to chase Brandon Lawson out of the city? Just our general thoughts whether that actually in fact happened. For me personally, I will say I believe she didn't, because even Kyle said that she didn't. And there didn't seem to be any Mexicans living in the neighborhood from what I've gathered, and Ledessa is not doesn't know a lot of them. And just in general, Mexicans chasing him out of town, it's kind of weird because he already left out of town on his own accord. He did not leave because Mexicans chased him out, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I would also say no to that. And if anything, that was the opposite of what she wanted anyway, right? She wanted him to come back to the house.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so the next question I have is, did Brandon see his brother Kyle and the 911 officer at 1:18 a.m.? Remember that phone call that he told Kyle, "Where is your pride, MF-er?" and like one time run? So Kyle believes that Brandon did in fact see him, because he notified him about the police approaching, you know, one time is approaching, run. So in Kyle's opinion, Brandon must have seen him because he said the police is approaching. So I will say, to answer this question, we should look at the general area, and I will say I believe that he did see them. You know, I will say my opinion is I believe that at 1:18 a.m. in the evening, Brandon did in fact see his brother Kyle as well as the officers. I feel like there's enough room to hide somewhere in the bushes, like maybe, I don't know, a good 300 meters into the bush line, maybe on this side right here, and just hide behind the bushes. A police car is fairly notable, like maybe it had like the lights, like the police lights on, you know what I mean? So I will say I believe that Brandon did in fact see Kyle and the police officer. It's pretty easy to hide in this area from people. What do you think, man?
Yeah, I think it's possible. I'd never heard that term before, one time, for some reason, that as like some kind of code for it. But yeah, that seems totally plausible.
Yeah, I think I've heard it, but yeah. The other thing is, I have a question. I don't think we will be able to answer it, but maybe it's a good thought. Did Brandon withdraw his 401k before his disappearance? And if he did, what does this mean? Apparently, he did withdraw his 401k, like with his current job, because he was starting a new job, I think. So some people speculate that maybe he withdrew this money to start a new life. Now, I don't really know how the whole 401k works and withdrawing it and what's that all about. So maybe you could like shed some light on that whole like field and stuff.
Oh yeah, so I'll just really quickly say it's a retirement account that it's sort of like sheltered from tax. You're not supposed to touch it till you retire. But then, yeah, because there's like matching funds, and you might want to be able to control it and make changes to what it's invested in. Yeah, under certain scenarios, you would presumably transfer it under a new employer's account, especially if some employers match contributions, which is great. It's like free money. Nope. So you put in $1, they put in $1 up to a certain amount. You know, his father, just to address it real quickly,
yeah,
father said that there's all kinds of money that's still sitting in accounts that hasn't been touched. So that was one of the things his father put out there, is like, no, he didn't run off, because why would he not take all these other money from these other accounts?
Exactly. The next question I have is, were there more people on the 911 call? I will say the only point of contention whether there were more people on the 911 call is that little area in between when the dispatcher says, oh, you ran into M, and there's a split second where you could, on a really, really low audio, like low levels, you could hear someone like kind of say protect, and then maybe the first 20% of the word yourself. So not even the full word yourself, but I could definitely see it being just some muffled sounds that sound similar to someone saying protect yourself. I will say, if I had to bet, I would definitely bet there wasn't anyone with Brandon, if I had to bet. But if it did turn out to be that there was someone with him, I wouldn't be completely surprised, because it did sound like the word protect was said, but I don't think it was. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still pretty cynical about, or pessimistic, that there was anyone else there with him. But yeah, I mean, there's some weird noises. It's just, to me, I don't hear like the gunshots or the weird side conversations, you know, that are being alleged.
Yeah. My next question is, why hasn't Brandon's body been discovered yet? What, in your opinion, what is like the most likely explanation why his body hasn't yet been discovered?
River destruction of body. That's my go-to.
But if,
yeah,
my question then again, but if he didn't die in the river, let's say it was a psychotic episode and he died somewhere in the bushes or something like that, why hadn't they found his remains in the bushes? But like the animals destroyed the body?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely an area that has animals, and I mean, even wild feral pigs that'll eat anything. I would say then in that case, he must have walked really far. You know what I mean? So way off the road, yeah. off into the bushes. Even, you know, Ledressa said that, I can't get her friggin' name right. Yeah, that it was very possible that he could be stuck in the bushes somewhere. So she said that, you know, it was kind of like they went back and forth between, like, well, why haven't they found him yet? But then they were like, oh, well, but, you know, like, the brush is pretty dense.
Okay. My next question is, why did Brandon take the longer route to his father's house? Because he didn't take, I mean, to be honest, now that I checked the maps, it's only longer by 8 minutes. I think it's not that crazy. I think it was like a more of a scenic route. Maybe he was trying to dodge the cops here. I think we've kind of answered this question. Now, the other question I have is kind of interesting. What kind of drugs do you think Brandon was on? Because we've all heard the 911 call. Now, it's highly speculated he was on meth. But is there a chance that after his car broke down, he was maybe on meth, acting up, but after his car broke down because he ran out of gas, is there a chance he took some other drugs that made him like act like super crazy? Is there a chance that when he left the house to drive to his father's house, he was still okay, kind of, still on meth, but like he's used to being on meth, but maybe he took something like unknown after he, you know, ran out of gas? Is that like a possibility in your opinion?
I mean, I think there's always a possibility from what I, how I've had it, is heard his behavior described when he's on meth. To me, it sounds like it's just meth. I think that's one of the things that's really weird about some of these drug markets, is where meth is prevalent. It's actually pretty sad, but in some cases, meth is like the only thing you really can get, maybe in those areas, or like that's the closest to, like, I guess, that feeling. Right. Like, there isn't necessarily a lot of selection, and yeah, I just to me, like, if people are saying, well, was he on shrooms or LSD or PCP or something else, and I think no, I don't think so. I think it was just meth.
Okay, gotcha. A few more questions, and I'm done. The next one is, during one of the calls with his brother, and I think one of the calls with his brother's girlfriend, he stated, at least I believe on two different phone calls, that he was bleeding. Now, in your opinion, was he actually bleeding? I think for me personally, there's no way to say, so I can't really answer, but maybe you could like shed some light. Like, do you think he was actually bleeding?
Yeah, you know, his dad was saying that because there's so much cactus, like some really, really ornery cactus out there with like 3-inch needles and stuff. If you're stumbling around in the dark, I don't, you probably haven't been in desert like that before, but, or not lately. There's like some plants that can really mess you up if you stumble into them. And if, I don't know, I could say, I don't think that he was bleeding like, you know, his arm fell off or something. But I could see like maybe he got scraped up. I mean, crap, I'm bleeding every other week from knocking my leg into the coffee table. So,
right. You know. Exactly. Okay, so a few more questions. So the other one is, in your opinion, why did Brandon call 911 on himself, but later on stated to his brother, run, like cops are approaching, where's your pride, MF-er? So it's like, why would you call cops on yourself, but then later on tell your brother to run away from those cops? Some people think that maybe after he called the cops, they did arrive and they tried to like do some harm to him. So now he's like, run, Kyle, run. They're not good cops, they're bad cops. I think it's like probably drug-induced nonsense, but yeah, I don't see him like in the time when he calls the cops, seeing cops do something bad and then turning on the cops because now the cops are the bad guys, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it makes no sense. It's almost comical to me when, or I don't know, comical or touching that people are so naive as to try to put rational behavior and turn it into some kind of like anti-cop, like conspiracy. You know what I mean? I mean, why would he have not said anything like that about to his brother, right? Exactly. Why would he say like, that's the cop that tried to hit me, or you know what I mean? Like, what doesn't, it just, it's to me, people are reaching so far when they do that in like their, you know, media driven right. hate of police or something. I don't know.
Last question, it will connect to this question is, Kyle has stated, because Kyle has done multiple polygraphs because police focused on him for some reason initially and he passed all of them. He thinks that the police officer he spoke to that night that responded to, you know, a truck being like parked in a dangerous manner, Kyle thinks that same officer should be subjected to a polygraph as well. Why is that? Why is Kyle thinking that the police officer needs to pass a lie detector test as well? So I have no idea, actually. Do you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's just like him trying to push stress back on them or, you know, something vindictive. I mean, what is he insinuating? Is he insinuating there's something fishy went on? I'll also say that, you know, like I said, I know I quote Dr. Grande a lot. I don't think he's perfect, but Dr. Grande says that polygraphs are extremely problematic. So they're not necessarily a good tool for either proving guilt or innocence.
Right. And that's it, dude. I think we could definitely arrive at the theories finally. Yeah. So my apologies for all of the audience members. I know this has been like rushed on my end because like, yeah, I just wanted to make sure we go through all of the points that we had. Now jumping to the theories, I think we could explore the theories. You know, there's only three like types of theories. Either Brandon was murdered, so this could be, in my opinion, Mexicans, which we don't think was the case, but it's like a theory. Law enforcement, that maybe he ran into law enforcement doing something suspicious and then they had to get rid of him because he was a witness. And then lastly, I see a drug dealer connection, some sort of drug acquaintances, something like that, caught up to him and killed him. Now, there's another line of theories that would say that he died because of a drug-induced psychosis. So, you know, we've talked about, like, the river. We talked about, like, how there's a lot of bushes there and that he could be, like, legit somewhere in those bushes right now. And Kyle did say that he was high on drugs. And Kyle did ask him, are you hallucinating? So Kyle is like, yo, he was probably really high. And then the last theory is that he started a new life. So he had issues with his girlfriend, Ladessa Lofton. He chose the longer route to his father's home, not the route that he was initially going to take. And he had a felony warrant which carried a sentence of 2 to 20 years in prison. Maybe he faked his own death to escape his legal problems. Yeah, dude, so I think these cover the range of theories here. In your opinion, dude, what is the most likely, or do you have like your own theories that I haven't yet mentioned?
No, I think you covered it. No, you know, based on a little bit of the popularity last time when I did this, I'm going to give my my percentage breakdown. So I figure it's about a 70% chance that he met some kind of misadventure, not involving anyone else, and died. Neither his body got swept away by the river, or he's, you know, deteriorating out there in the wilds. I'll give another 15% to the, like you said, the murder or murder conspiracy theories. And I think you covered pretty much everything, you know, that somehow he had a run-in with somebody and just wasn't able to properly or comprehensively verbalize it. And then finally, you know, the whole he ran away to start another life thing. The only way I see that happening, given the kind of personality he had and the way he was described, is I would say, if that was true, just hypothetical, that he's still in touch with his family and that they're all lying. I'm not calling them liars. I'm saying that's the only way somebody could see that happening and what's the way someone would describe that. And I would say if that's the case, the family does an excellent job of acting because they did not sound like they were lying. They were giving a lot of details and doing a good job of talking about him in the past tense. And he's got these 4 children that, you know, would be missing out on big chunks of their life if they aren't all secretly talking to them. How would they keep that secret, right? You would think at some point a kid would say something wrong about, like, my dad who's on the run, who we really talk to every Sunday. You know what I mean? So from my point of view,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, I think that would kill him. There's no way that going to prison for 2 to 20 years is worse than turning his back and disappearing on his whole family. He just wasn't that kind of flake, so, you know, or psychopath. So, yep. Yeah.
Dude, that's an excellent breakdown. I think I have the same sentiment. I will say that him being murdered, I feel it's not like popular when it comes to like real like armchair investigators, because a lot of people do believe something that foul play happened here. From my research currently, I haven't yet encountered like foul play here. So I will be agreeing with you. I think for me personally, if I had to bet, I'd bet that there was no foul play and that he did not run away. So that leaves him being on drugs, doing something crazy, and him dying somehow, some way, in the, you know, desolate Texas area. Maybe the river, maybe some animals, you know, got rid of his remains, something like that. You know, I think we covered, I'm actually surprised we covered everything we had in the notes. I thought we wouldn't be able to do it. I'm actually really happy that we did. The Pfizer shot, I feel like it's like losing its effects on me as like the hours pass. So I'm feeling better and better. So I'm really good. And I guess this was a good show, dude. Before we sign out, anything else you want to mention to the audience?
Hey, just thank you once again. We get more and more listeners and subscribers. Please hit subscribe and hit like, and keep sending us those great comments.
Excellent. Yep. I guess we'll see you on the next episode, guys. As always, take it easy, and peace out.